Hi there, this is Abel James with FatBurningMan.com, and thanks so much for stopping by. So today I'm excited to be here with one of my favorite bloggers, podcasters, book writers, and a man of many talents, the one and only Jimmy Moore. And he's going to tell us a little bit about his journey losing 180 pounds, living La Vida Low Carb. All right, let's meet Jimmy.
What's going on, man?
Oh, life is good. I'm here in Austin, Texas, and it's like in the 70s and perfectly sunny right now.
Ah, shut up.
I wanted to start off the year by doing transformative interviews with people who've lost a great deal of weight. Obviously, you're out in the open, you're right there, and I'm really excited to do this.
Cool.
For the edification of those who don't know Jimmy, he has several websites, several podcasts, several books, and is extremely active in the low-carb and weight loss communities. And you can check out his website at livinglavidalowcarb.com. So, Jimmy, I really appreciate you squeezing in the time to share your story with us.
Hey, my pleasure, man.
So your transformation hasn't just changed your body. It changed your entire life, it seems. You started from 410 pounds, lost 180. Now you're a svelte health personality who reaches thousands of loyal listeners and readers. And so you often interview other folks, but I'm happy to give you the chance to be on the other side of the mic today. Could you tell us a bit about your transformative journey with weight loss?
Yeah, it's fun being on either side of the microphone because when you're passionate about a subject, Abel, you can't help but just exude confidence about it and just be thrilled to be able to share the message with whoever will listen.
Yeah, and you clearly know your stuff, so I'm psyched.
Well, it's only after years of talking to people that I've truly come to a little more of an understanding. Back in 2004, when I first started doing this, I was just like everybody else. Lost, confused, scared to death of eating fat, thinking I needed to count every single morsel of calories that I put in my mouth, thinking I needed to run on the treadmill for hours a day. I mean, those were all the mantras back then that I felt like were necessary in order to attain optimal health. And unfortunately, you know, and not a lot has changed.
Yeah. It's
true. We're still kind of stuck in that world of eat less, exercise more, calories in, calories out, yada, 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 that we've been stuck in forever, and nobody's getting thinner, nobody's getting healthier, we're becoming more diabetic, we're having more incidences of heart disease. We're just really in a tough situation right now in America and, quite frankly, around the world, of chronic health really being our demise.
Right.
And it's until we kind of get this mindset of what I'm trying to promote through my podcast and my blog of finding what works for you. And it doesn't necessarily mean a low-calorie, low-fat, high, healthy, whole-grain diet. those things just may not work for you. And if they don't work for you, and if you fail time and time again, like Jimmy Moore did so many years trying to find that diet that was right for you, and it's not one of those things, and by golly, you need to think outside the box and look at things that possibly could work for you. And for me, that was high-fat, low-carb living.
Yeah. And so low-carb, there's a lot more to it than just going to McDonald's and ordering the bacon cheeseburger without the bun. Could you clear that up?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, we put too much of the focus, Abel, on the low-carb aspect.
Right.
And I'm saying that as a rabid low-carber.
Yeah.
I love the concept of carbohydrate restriction. I do think it's an important element. But when we put all the focus on low carb and not enough on the fat content and the kind of fat we're talking about, I think people tend to get confused. That's why you've got books out there like the South Beach Diet and this new one they call the Dukin Diet, which I have another term for it. I call it the Dorkin Diet because you would be a complete dork to try to do a low-carb, low-fat diet. That's probably one of the biggest ways to fail in your low-carb lifestyle is to try to do both low-fat and low-carb.
It's almost impossible.
It's just not a good recipe.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what I'm trying to do is educate people that if you're going to do low-carb, you probably should read a book about it. And one of the best books out there is a classic. It's been out there forever. It's Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution. And it's one that I often tell people who say, well, I'm doing the Atkins diet. I'm like, okay, well, wh- what did you like about his book? Oh, I didn't read the book. I'm just doing the Atkins diet. I'm like, well, how do you know you're actually doing the diet correctly? Oh, it's just meat, eggs, and cheese all the time. I said, well, maybe not.
Right.
Go and read the book and then determine whether you're actually doing the plan or not. A lot of people are shocked when I tell them on my Atkins plan I was allowed to have vegetables and I was allowed to have fruit. And they're like, oh, you can't have vegetables and fruit on the Atkins diet. It's all meat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what planet have you read that book on? Because that's not the Atkins diet that I read.
Yeah.
I mean, even some of the most prominent low-carb books that are out there, the Protein Power books, most notably, other than Atkins, they all encourage vegetable consumption.
Mm-hmm.
They all encourage fruit consumption if you're allowed to have fruit on your plan. Some people can't tolerate fruit as well as others,
right?
But most people can, and I think that just surprises people. So when we talk about this discussion of low carb, I think one of the missing elements is people just conveniently don't know what the heck they're talking about,
right?
Which is why I created my site and my podcast and everything that I do out there in the real world of where people are living and talking about diet and health, and they're learning things because a lot of people didn't realize, oh, you can have these things on a low-carb lifestyle, and you should. That's the other thing. They're like, well, I thought it was all about no-carb. And I'm like, nowhere in Dr. Atkins's book does he say eat a no-carb diet.
Right.
In fact, it's almost virtually impossible if you think about like the glycogen stores that are still in the meat. There's still some carbs in just about everything that you're consuming. I mean, even eggs have, I think, something like 0.4, 0.6 grams of carbs per egg. So it's impossible, virtually impossible, to eat totally zero carb.
Right.
But zero carb really isn't the point. It's about improving the quality of your food, getting away from the SAD diet, the standard American diet, and trying to become healthy. Eating a diet that's going to be right for you. And if it's a low-fat, vegan diet that's going to make you happy in life, I don't know why, but if it is, then you should do that for the rest of your life with all your might and gusto. But if you eat a high-fat diet and a low-carb at the same time and it makes you feel great and you're healthy, then by golly, that's what you need to be doing forever and ever. Amen.
Right. And it's amazing how many people, you know, try out these diets without ever having researched them or even read the books. You know, they start sipping nothing.
Oh, but I heard about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So cabbage soup and just eating nothing but bacon and cheese. And that's not at all. The first time I read those books, I was surprised by how heavy the emphasis was on healthy foods.
Yep.
And I think too often people focus on something being healthy. And I think you talked about this in your podcast recently, about how health is somehow dictated by what's not in food as opposed to
yep.
what is actually good about it and what's in it.
That's right.
Going back to your history a little bit, you tried the low-fat diet, as I understand, and you actually did achieve some temporary success. So what happened there?
Some pretty phenomenal success, actually. In 1999,
right.
I went on virtually a no-fat diet. I did exactly what I tell people not to do with low-carb.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't read a book. I just cut my fat. And perhaps I might have been able to sustain the loss had I actually read maybe Dean Ornish's book or Neil Barnard or any of these other vegan activists that are out there. And maybe today I'd be living La Vida low-fat reporter. I don't know. I doubt it, but who
yeah.
knows. But yeah, I basically cut all the fat out of my diet. It was basically no fat. I did still eat things that today I would just shudder to eat. I mean, I'm thinking back now, I would take to work with me this little Ziploc baggie full of a very controlled portion size of marshmallows. Because don't you know, Abel, marshmallows are naturally fat-free.
They're health food.
And they're healthy, yeah. They're naturally fat-free, so that obviously makes them good for you.
Right.
And I would have Twizzlers, which again, fat-free, never mind it has a load of sugar and wheat in it. But I didn't care. It wasn't about the sugar. It wasn't about the wheat or the carbs. It was all about cutting the fat. And don't you know, in 1999, trying to think of how old I was back then, I was under 30 at that point. So probably in my mid-20s, I lost 170 pounds eating that way. But the dirty little secret is it's not just about weight loss. It's about quality of life. And my wife will be the first one to tell you, Christine would say, that man was not a happy man. That man was not pleasant to be around. And if you know me now, you know I'm one of the most happy-go-lucky people you'll probably ever meet. That's just my personality.
Yeah.
But back then, when I was hurting because I was starving all the time, and I'm still hungry, but I'm not allowed to eat. You know, hunger was looked at as a virtue on a low-fat diet. And hunger is not normal. If you're hungry, that means your body is screaming for nutrition. It's wanting something. And I now know that my body was screaming for fat. That's why the Dorkin diet and the South Beach diet and some of these other diets ultimately end up failing a lot of people because, yeah, they cut their carbs, but then they cut the fat so low that they start having the cravings, and they get miserable, and they're hungry, and they're eating too few calories, and they end up giving it up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was highly successful at losing weight, but at the end of 9 months, I lost 170 pounds. I was so starving that my wife, Christine, said, hey, can you go to McDonald's and get me a Big Mac meal?
Yep.
And I was like, sure. Can I get something while I'm there? And she's like, well, yeah, you've been good. You've lost a ton of weight. Yeah, go ahead. So I get me a quarter pounder, supersized fries. That's back when they had supersized still.
Right.
Supersized fries and the biggest freaking Coca-Cola I could find and ate it. And I was hooked again. Yeah. And within 4 months, I had gained back all of that weight.
That's amazing.
And it was depressing, actually, because I so desired to be thin, which I equated with health, that I was not willing to put myself through the hunger, the pain. But for that incident where 1999, I lost a ton of weight but felt horrible. But for that happening, I don't know that I ever would have done low carb.
Yeah.
Because I would not have seen my need for something that would be sustainable, that would keep me satisfied. I never looked at diet as something that you just lived with for the rest of your life. Diet was what you went on and you went off to lose weight. And once you went off, it's just supposed to magically stay off no matter what you ate.
Right.
That taught me a huge lesson, Abel, where I was able to understand for probably the first time in my life, if I find a diet, it's got to be something I got to do for the rest of my life. It's not something I could just do as a temporary on-again, off-again thing and expect it to last.
Sure. And yeah, so that's one of the things, too. Many people lose enormous amounts of weight, and not that that's easy, but the real difficulty in it is maintaining that weight loss. So how have you been able to do that?
Well, and I guess I should say in 2004, I did start on the Atkins diet after reading Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution. My mother-in-law bought that book for me. Love that woman. Yeah. And she bought it, and as she had bought me actually several diet books over the years, but that's the one that really stuck, and so I'm very grateful to her for that. At the end of that year, I had lost 180 pounds, started off at 410 pounds on New Year's Day of 2004, so I just passed my eight-year anniversary.
Well, congratulations.
And thank you. And so I lost 180 pounds in that year, and I realized at the end of that year this was not going to be an easy task, keeping the weight off. And quite frankly, Abel, you know, when I hit 230 pounds, I'm 6'3" and pretty broad-shouldered. I'm a big guy.
Yeah.
But 230 was still pretty high. It's funny because BMI tells me I'm supposed to be 175 pounds, and I don't know what I would look like, but it would not be pretty.
Yeah.
If I was 175 pounds. I really wanted to be 200 pounds. So I never really did reach my ultimate wish goal. And I think a lot of that had to do was when I lost the weight, it was all about cardio and all about, you know, doing these things that I thought I had to do. I was still stuck in a little bit of the conventional wisdom regarding losing weight. And so it's been the years since that I realized that it's much more than about calorie control. It's much more than trying to work your butt off on a treadmill. You really have to and for your hormones and trying to get those under control. And I think that those are concepts that we just don't hear enough about.
You're right.
That if your insulin's out of whack, your leptin's out of whack, even the sex hormones, estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, all these things, those things can really mess with your metabolism and keep you from finding the success that you want. So, you know, quite frankly, I've been very honest about it in my blog. I have gained back some of the weight that I lost. Now, I started at 410. I am nowhere near 410 anymore.
Yeah.
But I am over 280 pounds, and I am in the process of working on trying to fix a low testosterone at this current time. I just turned 40, so that's kind of typical for people that start to get a little bit older.
Uh-huh.
Although I'm a little young, my doctor said, to be having this kind of an issue. And I have no doubt that the damage that was done from all those years of Coca-Colas and swings by the McDonald's on the way to work and ding-dongs and ho-hos is catching up to me.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, I don't give up. I realize that there is a healthy way to eat. Even if I made transgressions in the past, which very obviously the first 32 years of my life I did, that doesn't mean, well, the heck with it all, I guess I shouldn't do anything because I'm going to be whatever for the rest of my life. I have never been healthier at any point in my life than I am right now.
That's great.
And to me, health is better than any weight in the whole world. And I'm more athletic now than I've ever been, even with more weight than I'd prefer to have on my body.
Mm-hmm.
I would dare challenge anybody that thinks I'm slothful or lazy or any of those, I guess, common stereotypical ideas about people that are overweight. Bring it on, baby, because I'll challenge you on that. I had a really good 45-minute weightlifting session. I've really gotten into weightlifting in the past year and gotten a lot stronger. That's probably contributing a little bit to the weight gain because I am putting on some really good muscle mass.
That's great. Yeah, people worry too much about weight. It's much more about body composition. And, you know, there are just some people who can seemingly, at least temporarily, eat whatever they want and be skinny, but not at all be healthy.
That's right.
And so I think you're right to strive for the body composition. And that's great. A lot of people don't do weight training either. They kind of overlook it.
I didn't either. In 2004, I wrote in my first book, was about my weight loss.
Yeah.
And in it, the very last chapter, I said there was one thing that I lamented about my weight loss experience. It was this. I did too much emphasis on cardio and not any emphasis on weightlifting because I was so concerned with bulking up and so concerned with whatever. I was trying to take weight off. Why do I want to add weight? Of course, I've since realized how foolish that was.
Yeah.
Better late than never at the age of 40 trying to become as pumped up as I can be.
Right. Yeah, I was actually just reading, I think you just interviewed him from Free the Animal, Richard. I was reading his book on my Kindle this morning, and he was kind of talking about that, and he's just like, look at the people on the cardio machines compared to the people in the weight room.
That's right.
You can really see the changes in their body composition. Actually, I just did a video about that when I ran a few marathons, two marathons in 2 months, and I thought I'd be in the best shape of my life. Then I stopped doing it, and my health improved greatly, and I put on muscle, lost fat. It was just, exceptional stuff. So when you actually get into how your hormones work and your metabolism and not just your weight, that's when you really start getting some answers.
And there's no easy answers that's a one-size-fits-all. People are like, if you're gaining weight, you just need to eat less. And you need to up the exercise and calories in, calories out. And I'm like, if that really worked, I think we wouldn't have an issue because if something worked, people would be doing it.
Yeah.
But they tried it, and then what makes it even more egregious, Abel, is they try it, it doesn't work, and then they're told, you haven't done it right, or you're lying, you haven't really done it. And people are like, what the heck?
Yeah. And it doesn't help having those, little 100-calorie packs of marshmallows and that sort of thing. I remember
started on those things.
Yeah, I had a desk job in Washington, D.C. for a while after college, and we had something called Healthy Snacks, which was a program of, those supposedly healthy foods, which were, Cookie Crunch and little packets of Oreos and that sort of thing. And one of the things I address in my book, I talk about how, You know, how many of those 100 calorie packs can you eat? It takes you about 5 seconds. You know, you reach the end of the bag, you're just like, I need another one. Because it doesn't satiate your hunger in any meaningful way. But how many times...
Well, but people, it's only like 3 points on Weight Watchers.
Right. But then you think about it, and these people, these same people who aren't eating fruit, you eat like a big juicy apple, about 100 calories. And how often are you just like, I want another apple right now? You know,
right?
Because your body is actually getting nutrition out of it, and it has these natural mechanisms that stop hunger after that. So
that's right.
There's people
a little peanut butter on it; it's really satisfying.
Oh yeah. So, do you have any advice for someone who might be in a similar situation as you started out in?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I tell people is find a plan that will work for you. And like I said, if that plan is a low-fat vegan and you think that's the diet that hung the moon and you think you can do that forever and ever, then that's what you need to do.
Yeah.
But if that's not going to be sustainable for you, and if you do tend to lean more towards a meat-based type of diet, then look at the low-carb diet. Look at the paleo diet. Read Rob Wolf's The Paleo Solution, which I think is the most phenomenal diet book in the paleo world.
I love that
as
one,
a starting point for people. Have you read that one?
I have. Yeah, I love it.
So it's really well written. I love Rob Wolf, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
and I think he's done a great service to the community with what he's done. Mark Sisson's also done a great service with his Primal Blueprint.
Yeah, Mark's
another
good.
Great starting point for people that just don't know where the heck to start. And so find that plan and then follow that plan exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't say, well, I see what Mark Sisson says in this chapter, but I'm going to do it this way. No, do it the way he writes it, and do it with all your gusto for a period of time. And that period of time could be 3 months, 6 months, a year, whatever, until you're able to really kind of get this.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, when I started Atkins, it probably took me a good 8 or 9 months before I finally figured out, oh, this is how you do it. And it didn't really totally click for me until just one day I'm like, okay, I don't have to count anything anymore because I just know what to do.
Right.
And when you reach that point where you're on autopilot, where you kind of figured out this is what you need to do, you don't really have to think about all those little nuances of it anymore, then you know you found the diet that's right for you, and then make little tweaks here and there, but don't stray too far from the plan.
Yeah.
And then do it for the rest of your life, and you have no reason that you can't be a success with your weight and health from there on.
Right. And congratulations on all of your weight loss. It's incredible, your entire journey, and it's spanned. You said you started in 99. Was that your first real crack at it?
Well, 99 was when I started and did the low-fat diet,
right,
where I lost 170.
Yeah.
But it was in 2004 that I actually got serious and actually started learning that, hey, all that fat I've been shunning for 30-something years of my life, that was stupid. Start
yeah,
eating
good
it.
Stuff.
Butter is actually on the menu.
Yeah.
Cream and real full-fat cheeses and meats. None of this lean meat crap. it just totally shifted my paradigm. In fact, in my second book, 21 Life Lessons from Living La Vida Low Carb, I talk about all these things that I thought I knew were true about nutrition. Nope, they weren't.
Isn't that amazing?
And so I outlined a lot of the things that I talk about quite often on my podcast and on my blog that are true, and it totally will rock your world. And, I mean, this has totally shifted my life upside down because I had not a great career, but a career that I was on, and this just shifted it because I felt like this was something that needed a voice. It needed somebody that would articulate, if they could say that word right, the principles that will help people. And, you know, I never regret that decision. I just feel like I'm paying it forward now, Abel.
Yeah.
Giving other people the information that I wish I had a Jimmy Moore. I could have listened to his podcast and read his blog and been encouraged by and could email him and get answers to questions. You know, I'm hoping that I'm filling that void for people and helping change lives in the process.
Yeah, you definitely are. And that's great. This leads into my next question. I'd like to know a little bit more or tell my readers about your blog and podcasts and books. Could you speak a little bit more about each of those?
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't even know what a blog was in 2004.
Yeah.
I lost the weight, and the Atkins people heard about my success. Obviously, they were quite thrilled to hear somebody do very well on their plan.
Sure.
So they posted my weight loss story on their website, and I got emails from all around the world from people. I mean, they were just like, you know, how'd you do it? What did you do? And blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, people in my local community, my church, and different at work, they were, how'd you do it? How'd you do it? How'd you do it? I'm like, will you people leave me alone?
Yeah.
I said, I guess I need to write a book about it. And then somebody said, well, you need to start a blog. I said, what in the world is a blog? And then they explained it, and I'm like, oh, well, I love to write, and why not? So let's do that. So April of 2005 was when I started the Livin' La Vida Low Carb blog.
Yep.
And it's just grown from there. I mean, it basically went from this blogging format to a year later, I was contacted about doing a collaboration podcast on a thing called Health Hacks Podcast, which is now defunct. But my portion of the podcast was so popular that the producer said, dude, we got to get you your own show. And I'm like, I don't know how to do podcast shows. I don't have any experience other than music radio. I did a little bit of music disc jockey, but I never talked.
Uh-huh.
I never did like an actual talk type show where I interview people or anything like that. He said, oh, you'll do great. So we get on there, and some of the early episodes, I'm really robotic. It's just horrible.
And look at you now.
Oh, you know, it's become second nature to me now, just to have conversations, just like what you and I are doing right now. This is how I do my show.
Right.
And I just have conversations with people. And when you live and breathe this like I do, Abel, and you do, you can't help but just be curious and constantly wanting to learn more and more and more. And that's what I think drives me to keep doing all that I do with the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show, which started in October 2006. We just passed 500 episodes late last year.
That's great.
And, I mean, it's been a great ride. People have been very kind to support that show, and it's consistently in the top 25 of overall health podcasts, which just trips me out. I'm not an MD or an RD or any D after my name. I'm just a Joe Schmo guy out here just trying to learn like everybody else.
Yeah. You get some really great folks on your interview series, you know, Tim Ferriss, Art Devaney, Lauren Cordain, and authors, you know, the Wheat Belly and Perfect Health Diet. It's just a huge list and awesome folks. So congratulations on all your success with that.
Well, thank you. And what's funny is I just asked, you know, people like, how do you get all these interviews? I'm like, I just type in their email address and say, will you please come on my show?
Yeah.
That's it. There's no magic to it. I just ask.
Yeah. I love that about the, you know, weight loss and fitness communities. It's very collaborative like that. I'm really glad that you took the time to talk to me. I know you're very busy.
Well, I do have two other podcasts you did ask me about, all my projects.
Go for it.
I have a second podcast, Low Carb Conversations with Jimmy Moore and Friends, airs on Fridays. And that one is where I just talk to people in the community about some of the headlines of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a fun format, too. You know, I talk to so many experts. It's nice to hear what the people on the street think about some of these concepts and from their own particular experiences doing low carb. So that's kind of cool, too, lowcarbconversations.com on Fridays. And then in 2012, I just released a brand new third podcast. I do three shows of the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but on Thursdays now I do a live podcast. Abel, I've always wanted to do kind of a live call-in show where people could ask questions of experts, and so I created this Jimmy Moore Presents Ask the Low Carb Experts, where I just bring back some of the best people in my Rolodex that could address specific topics. So our very first episode, I brought on a former nurse who worked with Dr. Atkins himself for like 30 years. So she saw all the patients that Dr. Atkins saw in his clinic in New York City, and I thought, who better to address like weight loss obstacles?
Yeah.
And I've got people like Ron Rosedale's going to talk about leptin, and Bill Davis, cool, who you just mentioned with Wheat Belly, he's going to talk about, you know, why we have this mantra of healthy whole grains, and people can submit their questions and ask their questions live on the air. It's just a really fun show. AskTheLowCarbExperts.com is that one. And I mean, it just, there's just so much going on. It's just fun.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, thank you so much, Jimmy, for taking the time to share your story and talk with me here. So if you folks haven't checked out his websites already, do yourself a favor and check them out in the link I'm going to put on my website. So thanks again, Jimmy, and let's talk again soon.
Yeah, man.
All right, I'll be in touch. Thanks, Jimmy.